Inscribe new code. We've discussed the concept of your money story, your relationship with money, and the first three steps of change, how to recognize, own, and assess your money story. Step 4. Decide what to change in your money story. I'm going to describe a study and have you guess the biggest change impact. Ben Fletcher at the University of Hertfordshire in the United Kingdom devised a study to get people to break their usual habits. Each day, the subjects chose a different option from polls of contrasting behaviors, such as lively, quiet, introvert, extrovert, reactive, proactive, and behaved according to this assignment. So an introverted person, for example, would act as an extrovert for an entire day. Additionally, twice weekly, they had to stretch to behave in a way outside their usual life pattern, eating or reading something that they would never have done. So what do you think was the biggest change in this group? The remarkable finding was that after 4 months, the subjects had lost an average of 11 pounds. 6 months later, almost all had kept the weight off, many continued to lose. And this was not a diet, but a study focusing on change and its impact. The rationale: requiring people to change routine behavior makes them actually think about decisions rather than habitually choosing a default mode without consideration. They became aware that every behavior, each bite of food, was a choice, so they could reflect on whether that choice was in their best interest. Once becoming aware of actively making choices, you can decide to make the most informed and strategic choices possible. If you want to understand something, try to change it. We're going to talk about choice architecture and the dynamics of change. A precept for this step: part of the struggle to get people to embrace change is because many of the methods to facilitate change are often contrary to how the mind and brain work. Despite being presented with ample evidence of how change will be beneficial, many people don't make changes even when they know it's in their own best interest. Remember, your identity is not your behavior or habits. A habit is not a definition, it's a choice that gets repeated. If you define yourself by what you do or by your habits, it will be harder to change. When Albert Einstein had to leave Nazi Germany for America, his wife was distraught that she had to leave behind so much of their furniture and other household possessions. "I'm attached to them," she said. Einstein replied, "But my dear, they're not attached to you." Your habitual mind is your unconscious mind. The challenge: to instantly examine the thought that keeps you from being where you want to be or doing what you want to do. Every action is a choice. Every thought and feeling is a choice. Last seminar, we discussed the equation: belief drives behavior, behavior drives performance. For this step, decide what to change, we're going to add an equation. It's not my original, but I like elegant simplicity, and I can't do any better than this, so we'll use it. It captures the principle that you either create your reality or agree to it. Event plus response equals outcome. Every outcome you experience in life is the result of how you respond to an event in your life. Achievement is outcome. It's the result of responding in certain ways. It's not what happens to us, but our response to what happens to us that makes the difference. So, if you don't like the outcomes you're experiencing, you have two possible things to focus on: event or response. You can focus on the event and blame the event. Here's how that sounds: "Sorry I'm late. The traffic on I-10 was terrible." Or my personal favorite: "The assembly instructions didn't make sense." Or if I get really desperate, "Ah, man, they just left out a piece." Or you can focus on your response. You can change your response to the events to get the outcome you want. Once more, remember this essential principle for ownership of your money story. In adulthood, you either create or allow everything that happens to you. You worked out, so now you feel more energy and alertness. You didn't attend to marketing, and now your business is slumping. You've spent more than you've earned, and now you have debt. Choice is part of a mindset. The antithesis of choice is also a mindset with its own text. Here's how that sounds. Fate, luck, circumstance, bad traffic, things just happen. I don't think I can do it. The absence of the awareness of choice limits possibility. A footnote here. Whatever you're doing that you can't control is your addiction. You can be addicted to a substance, a behavior, such as spending beyond your means, or to a process, such as debt, a certain kind of relationship, or to compromised results. Money is energy. Anyone addicted to anything has difficulty regulating energy. Have you noticed that people specialize? They keep having the same success or the same problem. Success always leaves trails. So does non-success. If the success is with money and business startups, we see a serial entrepreneur. If the problem is with relationships, it keeps getting repeated. Catherine Ann Porter wrote, "His mother rejected him. 1,000 women since have paid for that." Obstacles and desires. Here's another notion to consider. What you seek is camouflaged in what you fear. To say that a little bit differently, show me an obstacle and I'll show you a desire. For example, show me clutter and I'll show you blocked energy that desires release. We always create the outside to match the inside. In other words, rather than strategizing to overcome or avoid or defeat an obstacle, simply consider not creating it. It's there when you create it. Consider using your energy to generate something else instead. There's a secret here. An obstacle is the unconscious mnemonic of desire. It reminds you of what you want, but makes it safe to want if you're afraid. I saw a cartoon of a dog straining at its leash, barking ferociously at a cat, as if to say, "Just let me at him." Now, the cat wasn't too shabby, actually looked mean, and was at least as big as the dog. All of a sudden, in the middle of a ferocious bark, the leash snapped, so the dog was free to go after the cat. He looked astonished, scared to death. He ran back, grabbed the leash, and tied a triple knot. Then he could again safely strain at the leash and bark his fiery, "Just let me at him." Another example of this dialectic of obstacle and desire. When viewing a scene in a film that you don't want to see, you cover your face with your hands as if to say, "No, I don't want to look." But then the desire creeps in and you peek through your fingers at what you're drawn to see. The obstacle makes looking acceptable. When you find yourself focusing on an obstacle, for example, "I can't find time to exercise," "I can't put away any savings," reflect on the underlying desire. When you're ready to consider that you create the obstacle, you're also ready to consider the possibility of not creating it. Imagine what it would be like not to create your obstacles. Choices can be framed to not engage obstacles. Each obstacle can be converted to an affirmation. For example, "It'll take too long. I don't have enough time." Reframed is, "I have ample patience to fulfill my purpose." A slight but certain shift from time to purpose. And if you have an obstacle or a problem, draw it out. Drawing is about relationships and seeing them as a whole. The primary obstacles that people give for not participating in retirement plans include fear of finances, inertia, and procrastination because of other pressing financial demands. The way you frame the question makes a great deal of difference. Here's an example of this effect. When companies automatically enroll their employees in retirement savings plans, the employee has to opt out to not participate, to actually make a choice that says, "I will not save for my future." When it's automatic, it's 100% initially, then it levels to between 86 to 94%. On the other hand, at companies where it isn't automatic and someone has to choose to opt in, 20% participate, over a four-fold difference. Here are the mechanisms that research has shown work best for a retirement plan: automatic enrollment, automatic annual increases in contribution rates, automatic rebalancing of portfolios, and the huge non-secret: you can set up your own automatic contributions. Another example of how people are sensitive to things that shouldn't matter. One group of countries in Europe has an option that people can donate their organs unless they check a box that they don't want to. The rate of organ donation, 95%. Another group of countries have a form where people don't donate their organs unless they check the box to donate. The rate of donation, 18%. Change and the brain. This is crucial to understand when we engage change. Both our minds and brains automatically resist change. Let's first look at how the brain opposes change, and then how to use this information to facilitate success. What neuroscience teaches us about change. Everyone has prior knowledge that affects how they hear and respond to new information. Existing knowledge is the beginning of new knowledge. It's where new learning starts, simply because it can happen no other way. One of the challenges of change is that you can't just present a fact or an experience and have it replace what's already there. When you know a fact or have a belief, both are anatomical structures in your brain. Simply overlaying another fact or belief won't work because the original anatomical structure is still there. So since the brain has a mind of its own, we need to consider how our brains work. Each of these precepts will help you craft your new money story. The mechanisms are somewhat complex, but the principles are so simple they're almost elusive. How the brain opposes change. 1. Change generates discomfort. Part of the reason for this resistance to change is due to a fact far more challenging than just getting someone to decide to do things differently. Any attempt to modify behavior and habits requires an actual rewiring of the brain. Activities that we've repeated that have become habits are hardwired into the brain. Neuronal pathways and neural nets, the highways and villages in our brain, have become etched by repeated habits to create efficient operation and to make routine behaviors easy. We don't have to think about how to drive the same way to work each day. Because of this default mode, we can think about other things or listen to a book. This default mode is also very energy efficient because the brain is freed up to do other things. When these habits are confronted and have to change, the automatic pilots in the midbrain get disrupted. We feel discomfort. The prefrontal cortex, the thinking brain, has to get busy with more energy and attention to process this thinking. It's work to change. The natural inclination is to resist the stress of change and to preserve the default habit. The brain naturally resists change. To hardwire behavior saves energy, so it opposes what has been adaptive from an evolutionary sense. The promise of change is to develop a new, better default mode. The brain just doesn't know it yet, so our minds have to lead the way. Some remarkable new research shows that consistently repeating new experiences even alters gene expressions. Beliefs can turn genes on or turn them off. Ray Kurzweil said, "Civilization advances by extending the number of important operations which we can perform without thinking about them." That's in his book, The Singularity is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology. 2. Change creates dissonance. We see what we expect to see, what our radar has been coded for. In fact, when we don't see what we expect to see, the brain's error detection mechanism reads as if something's wrong. The brain has this innate capacity to detect what neuroscientists call errors, the differences between expectation and perceived actuality. It registers simply as a sense that something's not quite right. At times it can be abrupt and explicit. Remember the experience of absent-mindedly going to the refrigerator and getting a drink of milk to abruptly discover that you took a sip of orange juice. Since a portion of your medial frontal cortex has the job description to recognize and correct errors, consider the emotional expense of two things. First, a lie. The surface story is the constructed lie. The subliminal story is the recognition of the lie by the error detection mechanism. Then you have to deal with the dissonance. Triple work. Secondly, consider debt. The real expense of buying something that you can't afford is that you have to pay more for it. Then, the emotional expense of your mind and dissonance in your brain to recognize that spending is different from affording. Then, you have to pay the interest. Triple work. You can deceive others, even your own mind, but your brain always knows. The good news here: this neural machinery can both recognize and correct errors to optimize behavior. So we also respond to mistakes. This is great if we remember to discern whether it's a mistake or a neural response and printout to change itself. 3. The brain is a prediction machine. Let's do an exercise. I want to tell you some numbers. 1, 2, 4, 5, 7, and 8. What's missing? Usual guesses are 3 and 6, perhaps multiples of 3. Consider this. Nothing's missing. I gave you a complete list of 6 numbers. Everything that's there is there. What's missing, if you thought it was, is inside your head, informed by a pattern of expectation. This is huge in writing a new story. Sometimes you have to outsmart your brain. When anything recurs 2 times in a row, the brain predicts a 3rd repetition. A stock goes up 2 quarters in a row, so the brain predicts that a 3rd rise will follow. A company has increased profits 26 quarters in a row, with projective earnings growth to 24 cents for the current quarter. They announce earnings of 23 cents instead. They lose $1.5 billion in market value in the next 5 minutes. What changed in those 5 minutes? The company's intrinsic value and balance sheet, or the mindset of the investors? J. Paul Getty said that there are 3 elements to getting rich. Get up early, work hard, find oil. You can see how brain prediction of pattern is also the basis of many jokes. Listing 2 things, then a 3rd non sequitur. Setup, payoff. The human brain automatically imposes patterns and predictions on repeated events. This makes it a challenge to override both emotion and brain patterns to make wise and balanced decisions. We need to be sure we predict, that we envision the right things. 4. Behavioral reinforcements can backfire. Consider this. Your COO, Chief Operating Officer of a company, determining a policy about employees being on time. Which works better, threats or reinforcements? The answer? Neither. Both are likely to backfire. Studies show two things. Threats work short-term, but draw attention away from work and back to the problem that created the behavior. And secondly, recognition for someone being on time actually raises anxiety and reinforces the neural patterns connected with lateness. We assume people will receive information about change and use it to better themselves. Not so, says the brain. In fact, being told what to do results in an innate opposition. The brain's natural homeostasis says, avoid change. Number 5 of how the brain opposes change and how to facilitate change. Motivation is not essential. Someone does not have to be motivated to do something. And someone may not generate motivation until setting a goal. An action can generate its own motivation. Many of the professional athletes I've worked with get up in the morning and go to the gym, but aren't motivated to do so. They just do it. Sometimes during the course of the workout, maybe late into it, they become motivated. Or they may just do the workout because they know it's the thing to do in order to do what's next. Motivation isn't essential, but a plan and sticking to it are. You don't have to be motivated to save for retirement. Just set up an automatic payment or participation plan. You only need to make a good choice one time. The quality of many future years will be affected. 6. Emotions change brain function. When emotions are triggered, the brain chemicals dopamine and adrenaline are released that prompt toward action and away from creativity and assessing knowledge. This is part of why self-talk is limited. Change your thoughts to change your behavior may work until emotion gets activated. As soon as emotion is triggered, reason runs and logic leaves. When there's possibility of a reward, dopamine is released to produce an excited state in response to anticipation of a reward, such as a risky stock investment or approaching a slot machine or blackjack table. Here's what we know now. It's not the reward that causes this spike in dopamine, but the anticipation of a reward. When gamblers were studied, their excitement occurred as they approached the slot machine. Their increased brain firing and dopamine spike preceded ever touching the machine, well before they were ever rewarded with a win. Secondly, the less predictable a reward is, the longer and stronger the dopamine neurons fire, creating more of a natural high. If a laboratory mouse is given regular predictable rewards for pushing a lever, their behavior stops quickly when the food pellet rewards stop. However, if the food pellets are infrequent and unpredictable, the mouse will keep pushing the lever almost indefinitely. This behavior is not confined to laboratory mice. Watch a bank of slot machines in Vegas and you'll see the same scenario, complete with lever pulling and reward pellets. The moral: people fall easily into the unconscious pursuit of dopamine and its accompanying pleasure, despite the obviously illogical downside. Also, research shows that the anticipation of reward can be more satisfying than actually receiving it, because attaining the goal actually shuts down the chemical engine of anticipation and the high that goes with it. Looking forward to the big win or big purchase can be even more thrilling than actually getting it. This contributes to buyer's remorse, as well as the almost ubiquitous experience that the new purchase may not be as exciting as you anticipated. 7. Stimulation and performance. Stimulation, also known as a little bit of stress, enhances memory and learning. The things that excite us and provide a little bit of stress short-term enhance learning. The time window on this phenomenon is about 2 hours. For longer periods of time, especially 4 hours or more, things go the other direction. Learning capacity declines. This means that with sustained stress, people make bad, emotionally charged decisions. The most important success strategy for many of the executives I've worked with is regulation of states of mind and management of emotion. 8. Closure to novelty. Studies show that even highly accomplished people close themselves to novelty as they get older. The major factor is not their age, but how long they've been doing a particular thing, such as been in a particular business. People who stay in one place and one position get most entrenched. Another place I see this resistance in coaching is family succession of business. The patriarch founder passes the company he founded 32 years ago to his 2 children to own and manage. It's a challenge because everyone involved changes roles and relationships. These last 2 principles are huge. 9. Neurogenesis is the creation of new brain cells. 2 things above all others create neurogenesis: enriched environment and exercise. An enriched environment of intellectual and emotional stimulation creates more complex brain structure. To co-create, stimulate thinking, challenge, story bust. The hippocampus is the part of the brain especially connected with creativity and memory. Mice from an enriched environment have a 15% increase in their hippocampus cells. What's your guess about how much exercise increases cells? Physical exercise increases the number of cells in the hippocampus by almost 100%. And very recently, these studies have been replicated in humans by non-invasive means in London taxi drivers and medical students at the University of Hamburg. Another finding: chronic stress impairs neurogenesis. 10. Neuroplasticity simply means that the brain remodels itself. This has been called the scientific revolution of our time. A region of the brain that originally had one job can be trained to perform another. The brain can reassign job descriptions of neurons, rezoning and developing cortical real estate. When we write a new story and change our minds, we literally change our brains. Some NASA astronauts did a training experiment in which they had headgear with a visual apparatus that gave an upside-down image. Consistently, 24 hours a day, up was down, down was up. They had to learn to adjust everything they did, reversing everything, thinking it through very carefully. Then about day 25, they each noticed something remarkable. Their brains automatically made the adjustments. They didn't have to anymore. Their brains had developed new neural pathways. Another group of astronauts in the headgear, however, were given a day off, out of the helmets for 24 hours at day 15. When they put the headgear back on, it took them 25 days from that point on to make the adjustments. Notice the role of consistency. A man approached J.P. Morgan, held up an envelope, and said, "Sir, in my hand, I hold a guaranteed formula for success, which I will gladly sell you for $25,000. "Sir," J.P. Morgan replied, "I do not know what is in the envelope. However, if you show it to me and I like it, I give you my word as a gentleman that I will pay you what you ask." The man agreed to the terms and handed over the envelope. J.P. Morgan opened it and extracted a single sheet of paper. He gave it one look, a mere glance, and then handed the piece of paper back to the man and wrote him a check for $25,000. There were 2 sentences on the page. every morning, write a list of things that need to be done that day. Do them. Step 5. Map changes. There are 6 crucial elements to map change. We'll talk about how to understand and incorporate each of the 6, an outline to master your money story. 1. Regulate states of mind. Dr. Vernon Smith won a Nobel Prize in economics in part by demonstrating how market bubbles are created. He did a series of trading experiments with economic graduate students. They were informed that the fair value of the security was $3. These traders knew the actual worth of the security, a significant advantage over the normal Wall Street situation. What happened in price bidding? They still ran the price up significantly past the $3 mark, the first time to over $6. When other traders in the experiment stopped paying a premium, the laboratory market crashed. In a second experiment, the same group formed another smaller bubble. It wasn't until the third time around that the investors wised up enough to stay with the security's actual value, even though they had known this from the very start. When Dr. Smith repeated the experiment with finance professors and other economic specialists, they formed the same kind of bubbles, followed by the same crashes. Bubbles are formed by optimism and collective tilt, getting on a feedback loop. Increasing prices stimulate optimism, causing more buying with price increases until the bubble, which is the state of mind, shifts. The equivalent of the child who said, "The emperor doesn't have any clothes on." This seemingly irrational force that overrides our logic and knowledge and causes us to believe that rising prices will continue to rise indefinitely, or at least as long as we're betting on them, is called human behavior. States of mind are like software programs. They're a mind-body state that determine how we perceive and process information and how we respond. We each have a set of different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention. A key element is to be aware of our different states of mind and know which state works best for what purpose. For example, creative writing versus editing, brainstorming versus completing a project. When someone is in an emotional state, they're overbalanced toward right brain response, the feeling brain. In extreme stress, the emotional brain can hijack the intellectual, logical brain and hold it hostage. So what do? Your brain is working against you. When you're in any state of upset, the first order of business is to regulate feelings to restore a cool state, a balance of left and right brain. Poker players call it tilt. When you lose big or win big, you're emotional and inclined to play your last hand or your leftover emotion. With any kind of tilt, break the state of mind. Step away from the table, whether it's poker or conference or dinner table. Take a walk. Wash your hands and face with cold water. Breathe deeply. Take a time out. Even sleep on it. "Let me think about that and get back to you" is a decision. Then you can respond when your state of mind is balanced. The brain equation for good decisions: right brain, emotional, plus left brain, logical, intellectual, equals balanced decision. Your response to a mistake affects the quality and effectiveness of your next experience. Don't let yesterday take up too much of today. The number 2 element to map changes: the power is in the focus. This is the neuroscience and quantum physics behind the law of attraction. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects a frequency. All the channels of a radio or satellite TV are available. We choose the channel, the frequency, that we want out of hundreds of possibilities. We each transmit and receive a frequency through our thoughts. If you want to change something in your life, change the frequency, the channel, change your thoughts. The bad news, if you think about what you don't want, it keeps showing up over and over. According to quantum physics, we each generate energy frequencies or vibrations. We project energy in our emotions and thoughts that are the source of what and who we attract, as well as the basis of our sense of well-being. The quantum Zeno effect says, the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With consistent focus and repetition, these chemical links actually become stable changes in the brain's structure. The brain rewires. Quantum physics offers us still another paradigm. In addition to our individual energy field, there is a collective field, and you can tap into and resonate with this field, the quantum field of possibility. Einstein called it a unified field theory. Basically, the human mind and body are bundles of energy, but interact with the larger energy field. This is how we can read people, how we can focus our choices and determine the flow of our future. What do you do to tap into this collective field? We project energy frequencies and, like a magnet, attract what we focus on. If we focus on the negative and on problems, that will be what we create. If we focus on the positive and on solutions, that will be what we create. The addendum to this is that actions have to be in alignment with thinking. Negative or positive results don't just happen, but come about as the result of actions. Consistent negative thoughts send negative chemicals into the body, and dis-ease results. This concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is more effective than a problem focus. These brain connections literally become mind maps and subsequently influence the reality that we see. The paradox that we know from neuroscience is that we do not attract what we want, we attract what we focus on. Everyone wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your energy to pursue prosperity. Your unconscious doesn't register positive or negative, just the focus. It's like a print or negative is the same thing. Your unconscious is the image. The power of focus is that whatever you attend to or focus on, you align yourself to create. So be sure and focus on the right thing. Here are some bad examples. I want to get out of debt. The focus is on debt. I want to lose weight. The focus is on overweight. Here's one that's kept a lot of dry cleaners busy. I want to be really careful and not spill something on this new outfit. Dr. Joseph Murray said it this way, your subconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, I can't afford it, your subconscious mind works to make it true. You become what you think about. So put energy into what you want. Focus on possibilities instead of problems, desires instead of obstacles. To fight something is to engage it, to add energy to it. This creates resistance. But when you focus on what you want, what you don't want falls away like your lap when you get up to walk. Review the exercise on page 5.9 on possibility thinking. 3. Visualize changes. Basketball players at Ohio State University were divided into three groups to practice shooting free throws. One group, no practice for 1 month. Second group, 30 minutes of practice daily at free throws. Third group practiced imagining shooting perfect free throws, nothing but net, for at least 5 minutes daily for 30 days. They were tested at the end of 30 days. First group, no practice, 0% improvement. Second group, actual practice for 30 minutes daily, 24% improvement. Third group, practice by visualization only, 23% improvement. On brain imaging, the same sequence of firing occurs with visualization as with actual shooting. So create a vision, then look back to see the path to get there. The most common mistake is having a vague sketch rather than a vision. Every image draws you to its conclusion. An image is like a goal. If you create a negative image, such as, I can't dance, or I'll look really goofy if I cut loose on the dance floor. I have no trouble coming up with some of these examples. This will be a destination that your brain will draw you to. If you picture yourself as not able to dance, when you go to your party, the image says, I can't dance. You will stay in the zone of that self-image. You create your experience. You can create something else instead. All of you can, at least. Create an image of your goal and live into it. Visualization crystallizes possibility into an articulated idea. The experience changes the brain. A vision serves as guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it, to live into it. 4. Insight changes the brain. At the moment of insight, an aha experience, a complex new set of neural connections is created. Parts of the brain light up on fMRI scans during these moments. An aha activates centers in the brain to release certain chemicals. Contrast that with when someone is given information, facts, a directive, or an order. Nothing happens. No part of the brain lights up. As important as this insight-induced change is, the sustained attention is what hardwires it into the brain's circuits. Number 5, to map changes. Take action. The world will not pay you for what you know. It will pay you for what you do. It rewards action. To analyze and plan are important. Payday, though, comes with action. Winners develop a plan and set it into motion. It may not be perfect, but they self-correct and keep moving forward, learning from their mistakes to produce results. This may be why a group of the brightest people anywhere with all kinds of degrees can plan and figure something out, but struggle to make it happen. Meanwhile, the guy who barely finished high school owns a lot of real estate on the west side of town. 6. Transform identity. A new experience or idea must be focused on consistently and frequently. When attention is consistent, brain circuitry is stabilized. The mindset of identity then incorporates the new experience to integrate it as part of an evolving self, as a component of one's identity. Otherwise, it's not integrated and then prone to be dismissed as not me, or attributed to luck or to circumstance. This is why a vision needs to include the experience, the feeling of actually achieving it. When you inhabit the entire episode, you make it part of your self-experience. This is what we'll examine at length in Step 7, Program New Identity. The most important thing about a goal is to have one. The most important thing about a plan is to stick to it. Wisdom is to know the right path. Integrity is to take it. An application of deciding and mapping change. Your debt story. I recommend doing the 3 exercises under debt story in step 5, beginning page 5.10. If money were about math, we wouldn't need to be talking. If money were about math, no one would have debt. But more than math, money is about emotions and psychology. It's about each individual's money story. Debt cycle stealth. You can fulfill a desire you didn't know you had by spending money you don't have. You can define yourself by acquisitions not paid for. You can even borrow based on how much money you will be lended rather than how much money you can pay back. Spending money generates the perception, both by the spender and the observer, of having money. Fulfilling a wish creates the desire. When desires define identity, the quest becomes unrelenting. Many people who fall heavily into debt do not necessarily have psychological problems, but because spending takes on a life of its own. With spending, the chase is on. They try to afford what they buy, and money can never buy what it represents emotionally. It's hard to save because the way our minds work and our brains are wired. It's hard to resist the immediate pleasure of buying. It activates the same pleasure center in the brain that dopamine does. Spending money is addictive. It changes a state of mind. It's difficult to substitute a theory like future need or long-term saving or retirement for the immediate pleasure of buying. Credit cards segment the pleasure of spending from the pain of future payment. Then our optimism bias makes rainy days and repayment an abstraction. Rationalization heightens in proportion to the elastic boundaries. Payoff in 3 months can stretch to 6 or 12. Increasing abstraction of money emotionally distances the obligation of debt. A faceless credit card company becomes a vague authority. The most common way we're short-sighted in our decision-making is that we choose a small amount of something right now rather than a larger amount in the future. Here are some possibilities to counter each of these tendencies. Neuroeconomist Ben Seymour at University College in London has shown that imagining a future purpose has the same effect in the brain as getting it. Saving is easier when it's for something specific that we can envision. It's easier and more specific to create a distinct vision for each goal, such as a vacation, college tuition, or a new house. Tangibly calculate the cost of debt so that it becomes real figures. Concretely represent the magic of compound interest. Figure out what the money you spend would be worth in 5 years, in 10 years, at retirement. Remember the idea from when you were a kid, just pay me a penny a day and double it for a month. The 8th wonder of the world is not that new mall in Dubai that's twice as big as the one in Minnesota. It's compound interest. And automatically deduct retirement savings each month. This commitment device is a decision you'll only have to make once. A recent economic study showed that credit card holders are consciously aware of only $4 of every $10 they owe. The underestimation is a form of denial. Debt has been called a secret sin because of the shame attached. Here's what an expert had to say about debt. Uncle Junior to his nephew, Tony Soprano. You know, your father and me started that poker game over 30 years ago. We were talking one day about how the credit card companies, you know, they work their angle. How they don't care what you bought as long as you don't pay all at once. They juice you to death and you thank them for letting you have a card. You'd rather be juiced than pay all at once. It's a certain kind of player. That's why they call it the executive game. We render money an abstraction and deceive ourselves. I can do it on my credit card so it won't be an immediate expense. And, as Richard Medley said, free money makes you stupid. Remember this from everything you've heard. Right now, saving and the future are both abstractions. There will be a time when they both become very real.